This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Betty Ann Lawler Wisnowski.
Alison Milden.
And I'm Stuart Burks. So after school you went to Teachers College, and then you went teaching?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what sort of teaching?
I started out at Ross Intermediate. That's a long time ago. And from there, I went into the primary, down into the primary area, and taught at Terrace End.
Is that, you were sent to Ross Intermediate? Was that the Bondi?
Yes, that was my year one, but that was virtually decided for you.
Just 1 year's decided, was it then?
Yes, that's what you called a probationary year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's not a bonding thing.
You know, if they wanted you, they kept you on. If they didn't, or
but
if you
wasn't, there something about they would fund, or was it maybe not at the time you were training, but they'd fund you through the training, and then you'd agreed that they will send you somewhere, and you have to teach them.
It
wasn't.
Didn't apply to me.
Was for us.
Well, it didn't apply to me. I must have got
so
it
a few years.
Time.
So sometime
we
later they brought in the bond.
3 years. PA year, probationary assistant 1 year, then 2 years teachers. You applied for the school,
okay.
But you were meant to do 2 years.
Yeah. Yes.
So you trained for intermediate or
well,
is the same training for
senior school at that stage? Okay. It was senior or junior school, and I trained for senior school. Alison, what did you train for?
I made the unfortunate choice of junior and thought that if I taught infants they wouldn't be smarter than me.
but they were.
In fact, as I discovered, it was not the right place for me. I'd have been much better with older children. But again, just too nervous to be assertive to say what I wanted. Because I didn't want to be a teacher either. Absolutely.
Where
did
was
not.
Your dream then?
I wanted to be a nurse.
Oh, I see. Those were all my cousins were either teachers or nurses.
Yeah.
And so, to me, there wasn't anything else.
I wanted to be a nurse, but nobody encouraged me to be a nurse. So I went to Teachers College and hated teaching.
Oh, I just loved it. In those early days, I did my probationary year
at Ross.
Ross, and then I was asked to go to Manawatu College, and it had just stopped being a district high school, and a new headmaster had been appointed for this entirely separate school, and they had their own premises even, and the other school was over there. It was really quite an experience.
So what age were you teaching?
Oh, the full gamut. I taught school certificate subjects that year. Now,
but you'd been trained for the younger ones?
Yes, and, yes.
So how, after, 1 year's experience, they put you in teaching?
Well, no, you learned how to teach.
Okay.
You didn't learn
but not
subject.
The curriculum, yeah.
No, not necessarily that, your subject. At that stage, it didn't worry me about subject because I was asked to go there to what we virtually covered in high school as... commercial practice. So I was going to teach typing and shorthand, which, and I had all these other bits of paper, the outside exams that I'd sat, and they looked pretty good. And so that's why I was virtually sent there. And when I got there, I was the youngest and the greenest. And so what did I get? Horticulture? Mm-hmm. What's that? I did music. That was okay. And social studies were my four areas there.
Was there a set curriculum that you were given to follow?
Look, it was a brand new institution. They were moving into the buildings.
But the Ministry of Education didn't say this year, this is what...
Oh, yes, it must have been there somewhere. But on the whole, it was a whole new setup with a new man at the hill. And I'm trying to recall his name, but I'm too old to think of that. But he took one look at my name and decided that I must be German.
Because it's Lola...
Wisnowski.
Wisnowski. Yeah. And he thought that was German.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I did what he said, which was quite simple. I had passes in horticulture that year. It was a subject I didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm.
But I did all the school gardens. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be part of it. Also English, which I was kind of augmenting, I guess, for the person that was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was only those two. And from there I came back to town, because I was travelling to Foxton.
Oh, yeah.
And I travelled down daily.
Yeah. And what were the pupils like? Were they sort of country-type pupils as you've grown up?
They were very, country-type children, that nothing like the ones I'd grown up with.
Yeah.
They were very knowledgeable. But neat things happened. One young lad who was struggling. The students who were not enthusiastic school attenders got put into horticulture. And that's why I had all the school grounds in order and planted rose beds and flowers, mm-hmm. because
you had so many people.
Yeah, well, they had, it was 54 boys for horticulture. Mm. But it was challenging.
Yeah.
And one lad one day brought along to show me his hobby, and he was keen on beekeeping, and he produced a matchbox, and in it was the queen bee.
Mm.
And he gave us the most interesting account of his beekeeping. And yeah, that was a real bonus. Mm. I guess you could tie that into horticulture. Mm. I did on that day.
Yes.
Well, it was pretty essential to horticulture because no bees, no plants.
We weren't thinking like that back then. Yes, that was good. And I think I did 14 years all up in the primary sector. And then I was asked if I would teach at the Kura Kaupapa to run the English program, because tribal disagreements had reared their ugly head. And of course there are a number of different tribes represented in the Kuras. It's not all Ngāti Pūrua.
And now, for future and other readers, so you're using the Maori terms here, what do they represent?
The Kura Kaupapa is the total immersion schools.
Mm-hmm.
And
these existed in the 1960s?
Well, no, as I've said, I've done 14 years.
Oh, yes, much later. Yeah.
And at that point, because of that situation, and I had been involved with a group from the Teachers College.
Mm.
We had wonderful teachers available at that time. John Tapiata, Cliff Whiting, Parisiasia, and the artist Paul Dibble.
Mm.
was in the art department. Now, these were very competent. We didn't realise the gem that was sitting in the middle of our town when we had these people. And I had been doing a course and some classes, and we had started to put the plans together for the house down on the Teachers' College grounds. And because of that association, I was asked, figured I'd be pretty, I wouldn't be arguing with her.
Yeah. Did you have any Maori connection at all in your upbringing?
Not in my upbringing, but after Teachers' College, Cliff and Heather Whiting became friends, and John as well, and we were caught up with maintenance of marae up the Whanganui River and then across on the east coast at Mamatuke, and that was my association. But they figured that I wouldn't be stirring. And I no, of course you don't.
Okay.
And that brought me into touch with the people who were trying very hard to increase the number of Māori graduates and the number of those attending Teachers' College and putting in front of classes. We just simply didn't have enough, and even now we don't. And so through that, in my classroom, I took third year students, and that was the my association with it, encouraging these young people to become teachers and stay teaching instead of being fed off into the various.
And was that successful?
I think it's just plodded along, carried on, and every now and then there's a burst. And yeah, at the moment I think we're holding our own.
Yeah, okay.
Some fine young people. I can say this because my grandson has just completed a teaching. I don't know, is it a diploma they get now?
I think, yeah.
Well, or degree, a degree.
Is a degree? Yeah, because he's already a double degree.
Oh, if you've got if you've got a degree already, you can do an extra year's training.
Yeah, that's what he's done. Yeah. He's branching out into his first year of teaching at somewhere, I think, in... I think it's either Napier or Hastings.
Wonderful. A man. Fantastic.
Is that he's secondary school? Or?
Oh, yes. He's a very talented, gifted musician, and has been... His work profile would be in music. And his first degree, he did... an honours degree at the I think it's a Massey Victoria combination
the joint thing
down
there,
in Wellington. The teaching thing carries on. My daughter's a teacher now, her son is a teacher, so it seems to be
might be a family tradition, the understanding of what it involves.
No, it's in the genes.
Well,
obviously,
it wasn't in ours.
No. Well, do you think then, has teaching changed a lot? In what way?
There seems to be a lot of tick the box. In you've got your curriculum, and you've got your, not even your teaching points. You've put all this together, but during this term, you must have covered this ground. We didn't have that. We had far more freedom. If, like the boy with the bee, we could go off with him. But now things are so tight, there isn't the time to necessarily go off like that. Fortunately, New Zealand teachers are flexible. And they're very good on the whole. And everything gets covered. plus.
Yeah.
But it's a struggle.
Yeah. Has the curriculum's broadened out a lot, has it, compared to...
I don't know if it's broadened, but they've put in a lot of things that I don't think should be there.
It's more prescriptive.
Yeah.
Far more.
And yes. Assessment's changed as well, hasn't
it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm. Yes, I'm delighted with the fact that we now have New Zealand history at last taking its place.
There's quite a few older people who I've recorded who said that they did learn a lot of local history, at least when they were at school. I mean, these are people who are maybe 80-odd or so, but it might just be specific schools where the teachers covered the...
I think it might be specific teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
And if we got... we had Mr. Hardy, who came in from the South Island, who... didn't really have an overview of the Māori history and or even the local history for this area.
Okay.
So he certainly, not only did he not give it, he didn't have it and of course that has to be happening still.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
But it's exciting to think that now these things are going to be in every school.
Yes, yeah. I suppose one of the questions, though, is sort of just, in fact, there's debate about just what history, you know, the idea how to teach various things, what should be included and what not. But you were saying you had a lot of, if you had a lot of flexibility in terms of what you put into the teaching, what about the assessment? How was it assessed then?
Oh, we all sat exams. There was an exam. I don't know how the art people got on back then, but there was an exam for everything. And now,
and those would be internally set within the school. So they determined how good. So there was no. What about comparison of standard over the country then?
That came with the PAT testing that we all did, the whole of New Zealand did, that you got a result from those tests. But that was the only standardised test in primary area.
So I suppose that primary school has certain flexibility, and then once they moved on, there'd be certain recognised...
In the very early days, there was what did they call that exam that they had to pass before you could go into the next level?
Well, this would be our parents' generation.
Yes.
Yes. It's a bit like the 11 plus in the UK.
Yes.
Oh, well, no, except you either passed or failed, and it just determined if you didn't have to pass it to move on. So you mean in those days they could be held back and say, you have to repeat a year until you pass? Well,
fortunately that had gone by the time I hit the classroom, but it wasn't, still in certain circumstances it wasn't unheard of to hold a child back that you didn't feel had met the level. We didn't worry about socialisation.
Yeah.
Tough that they got put back and everybody knew they were dumb, tough.
Now there's a lot said about things like gifted children and special needs children and so on. What happened in your teacher training and your teaching experience, were there attempts to cater for those, the tails of the distribution?
In some, with some lecturers there were, but no. Not really.
So you're teaching a class of, what was the class sizes then, would have been up to about 30?
40.
Yeah. So you teach a class of about 40 with all varying abilities. No streaming?
Yes, we did. At Ross Intermediate we did, and that was wonderful. Because you got a bright class. If you're one of the teachers that has been there 100 years, you'd get a bright class. Okay. But a capable class. They could fly. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But there was the alternative as well.
Yeah.
I think that's gone now completely.
Mm.
But I know when my boy went off to boarding school, it was still very, very streamed.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly where they streamed.
Okay, was that streamed by subject or just overall?
Overall.
Overall, yeah. Okay. So, and that's the best they could do in catering for different ability levels. Like now there's a lot of talk about the gifted children and do you have special things put on for them and so on, or special needs children.
Depending, various schools have various ways of handling it. In some cases, I don't know quite how they do it. There's extra hours that are given perhaps to the headmaster for admin, and he can devote that time to a group of gifted, talented kids.
Mm-hmm.
I know a school where that was happening. But the old idea, we had a special class. When I first went to Roslyn School, there was a special class where the children who were struggling were placed. And they did wonderful things. And I think the most important thing they did was socialising and teaching the kids how to exist in our world as it is.
Mm.
And it was deemed that it was not a good idea to do that, and we took the special children into our classes.
Mm.
I'm strongly against that, very strongly against that. It only takes one disruptive person to upset the education of not just them. But anyway, that's my BMI bonnet that just flew out.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you enjoyed your years of teaching?
I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Thoroughly. I finished my time working in the Māori. We weren't separate, but, you know, I was doing the Māori thing with teaching English. I.e. I was in a total immersion school.
Okay, so you were a teacher in a total immersion school,
yes.
Which meant you were teaching in Māori?
No, I was teaching English.
Oh, okay. So you were the foreign language teacher.
Yeah, I was actually, and my class was separate,
which
I liked, because the minute the children stepped outside, they had to go back to te reo.
Yeah.
And if I heard English outside my door, well, they got growled at.
Yeah.
Because you don't do that. And then I moved down to we were at Teachers College based on the marae.
Just a minute. So when you were doing that, what were their English language skills like?
Oh, well, some of them spoke pidgin.
Yeah.
That's the best way to describe
so
it.
So at home they'd be speaking Māori and at school they'd be speaking.
I don't think it was clearly defined like that. They spoke
the way
it was. And as we're doing now, we're including a lot of Māori in our everyday language. Well, these children had that ability as well.
Okay. But they could understand English perfectly well.
And
so it's just in that context they knew a lot of the Māori words would be understood. So
they live in an English-speaking world.
Yes, yes.
Of course, English was their first language.
Yeah. But no, you were saying it was like pidgin, though.
Some of them, yes. I've got a feeling they might have had parents who had a different mark on the back of their jackets. Mm. And there were a couple of those, and their...
Mm.
language needed a lot of, they just didn't have any vocabulary at all. I can remember reading three blind mice to these children, running up a clock, or it just, the whole concept was so foreign to them, had me in stitches.
Well, to have a clock for them to for a mouse to run up, I think.
Yeah, well, that's
might be
one.
Not the
that's
sort of thing
one.
They've seen.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who would run up a clock, yeah. And what's a clock anyway?
Well, they said, yeah, precisely, they said the same about, say, refugee family
oh, yes,
children
I,
come
yes.
here. And you talk about sort of chimneys and crystal, they would have had no concept of
no,
those things
no.
where they came
from.
No,
I also did a stint with children with English as a second language, and language seemed to be where it pops up, yeah.
Yeah,
and I went then down to Kupinga, under Massey, working there.
To Kupinga, which is?
The name of the house that's down there.
Okay.
At Teachers College.
Okay.
And we were working hard to encourage and support the Māori students.
Okay. So you went from teaching in schools to teaching at the Teachers College, training teachers?
No. That area is Teachers College land, and the Teachers College are now trained through Massey, as you know.
Okay. Yep.
And so I moved sideways, I think. I much prefer the children. But so many of... This is very early days, and we had lovely people, but so many of them got trained and they got gobbled up by government departments, seemed to be the big ones, where they needed a Māori speaker.
Mm.
And so here they have these people who are tertiary trained with the added advantage of te reo.
Mm.
And we weren't getting them into the classroom.
And this was in the 1980s,
1990s? Oh, how long? I bought a business after I left teaching. Yes, it would have been 70s, 70s, 80s.
Okay.
Yes. And the whole idea of pushing te reo speaking students was new. And we realised we needed these people. Emma Choate was one of the main instigators here. We had a little committee. You've got to have a committee.
Yeah.
We had one. Where we worked hard, first and foremost, to get te reo into the mainstream schools. So we suggested and we got an edict from the board, I suppose it must have been, department, that 3% of the ordinary curriculum would be covered in Māori, and that was we weren't speaking it, but we had to be covering Māori topics. Well, you can imagine how many of the trainees coming out of Teachers College had any training in that area.
So what does that mean? You mean 3% of maths had to be covering Māori topics?
Well,
or?
No. What it meant was, If you included the use of half a dozen words in your maths class, we've covered it.
Okay.
It was very loose.
Yes.
And but anyway, that was a foot in the door more than anything.
So, just for example, some words that you'd throw, would they be, you'd throw in numbers or the Māori for add, subtract or multiply?
No, you'd get them to count to 10 in Māori.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you don't go off at the top end, you start down there and move from there. And so, I don't know if you could say there was any success that you could, because most teachers just simply didn't have the vocabulary or the knowledge to do it. And so it was a very hit and miss thing. And about that point, I bought my business and left teaching.
Okay. Why were you, you'd had enough or you just felt like doing something
different? No, my husband died and nobody wanted his business, so I bought it out of his estate. I didn't want it to move away from the family.
And what was his business?
He manufactured animal pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
He was a veterinary.
yeah.
surgeon, and he was at Massey okay. initially too.
Yeah. And you were able to, you had the skills for that, or you were managing it and had skill
work? Come on. You could do bookkeeping.
Come on, you're running a business.
The skills to run it, but yes, but to understand, you weren't making the pharmaceuticals yourself.
No. I had an excellent staff.
Yeah.
But I also believed that any aspect that I asked staff members to do, I had to understand and be able to do myself, which I don't know about that. But I finished my working career there. I've been lucky that my grandchildren all went through the kura. They are all te reo speakers. And I noticed my great-granddaughter also is, she's one, and her vocabulary is Māori.
And are they all Pākehā, or are they part Māori? Or?
They're Whitings, so that makes them Māori, but that family. And my son works for government department, and I've got to remember what it is. But anyway, it's the Māori department.
Okay.
And so somehow it's part of being a New Zealander.
Yes.
We've all got it.
Yeah. And you've got much te reo yourself?
No, I don't use it anymore.
No.
Once I moved into the business, I had no occasion to use it.
Yeah.
And except around my grandchildren. It doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, still.
Thank you for listening to Manawatū Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatū People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatū Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatū People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.